This is Elle Griffin, and you're listening to Careerist, the Art of Professional Achievement. Every fall, I return to the University of Dayton, where I am currently completing my graduate degree in Mariology, the study of the Virgin Mary. My degree has nothing to do with my career, rather it's something I do solely for myself, and it's one of the greatest joys in my life. Every fall, I look forward to returning to Ohio, when the leaves have changed and the weather has turned colder. I pull out my leather boots and my cashmere sweaters and walk through campus toting textbooks in leather-bound bags. It feels nostalgic to grab a cup of coffee from the library and study for hours in the annex. But more than the feeling itself, the part I love most of all is academia. The part where I get to learn and stretch my understanding in ways I never could on my own. I want to learn and to grow, to amass knowledge and gain wisdom. That is something I crave above all else, and it is why I return to school fall after fall, to absorb the knowledge my teachers have to offer me. But this year, I have forsaken the tradition, in part because I've started a new job. I'm the head of marketing for a tech company called Everyone Social, but also because I want to turn my attention toward a different kind of study, self-study, a self-study that's directed towards my career and learning the skills necessary to one day bear the title Chief Marketing Officer. Though I've spent close to 7 years working my way up as a marketing manager, director, and now head of the department in the tech industry, I've never received any kind of formal business training. I received my bachelor's degree in fashion merchandising and my minor in French, and everything else I learned about marketing and business I learned on the job. But I've been craving more formal training. If there was an MBA in becoming a CMO, I'd already have it. Instead, I decided the next best thing was to create a podcast, a place where I could learn from experts in my industry and share the journey as I go. I knew who to turn to first in our inaugural episode, Rachel Hofstetter. Rachel is the CMO of Chatbooks, but the only formal education she's ever received is her bachelor's degree in economics. Over the years, she's moonlighted as the food editor for Oprah Magazine, founder of tech startup Guesterly, and published author for Penguin Publishing House. Here's what she had to say. You have your bachelor's degree in economics. How did you get the skills necessary to make the leap from an economics degree to interning at Cosmo Girl magazine?
Well, you will see this a lot of times in my career, which is that I faked it. I faked all of it, right? And I think you have to get really comfortable with doing things that you don't have any formal training with whatsoever. Fast story about how I did that one is I had passion. I loved magazines. And I wrote an email to a woman who was hiring for an internship at Cosmo Girl, Chanda Turner, amazing woman. And I said, hey, I love this. I am obsessed with this. Here's what I want to do. And passion will get you into something. You know, somebody will take a call and then you have to prove yourself. And was I a great writer then? No, but I was an intern, so it was okay. And so honestly, it wouldn't have mattered at all if I was an English major or journalism major whatsoever. If you can just jump in and try really hard and be open to learn, people will take a chance on you, especially when you are 21.
Oh my gosh. Awesome. But from there, from Cosmo Girl, then you jumped to Oprah Magazine and Reader's Digest. How did you become an editor at these top publications? And kind of even more so, how did you learn how to become an editor while you're on the job?
So editorial is definitely on the job training. I don't even think you can really learn it in the same way in a school. So it's on the job training and you're learning from the editors who are right above you and then also a couple levels up, and you are watching what they do. And a lot of it is that you will make a lot of mistakes, and making the mistakes is completely fine, but you have to learn from those mistakes. And I'll add in there, like, I worked at Cosmo Girl for quite a while before I went to Oprah, but I'll add in there, I remember all of these Saturdays where I would go into the office and I would eke it out literally, you know, assignment by assignment. And I would beg for assignment, right? I'd be like, I think I can do this. I would jump in, I would have a new idea. And then to do it right, I would sit there and I would look at the past issues of that column. And I would look through 20 past issues and I'd write it out. And looking back now, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can write that in 10 minutes. Like, it's super easy. But you do have to be willing to say, hey, I'm just going to learn this by putting in the time.
Okay. So you learned how to, for instance, write an article by reading all of the past articles.
Yeah, or you can learn how to write a headline by looking at all of the past headlines and saying, what do they have in common? And you break it down into patterns. So to learn how to write, it's literally, okay, what is the exact pattern of this sentence that they open it with? And I would ask questions too, right? I've been able to work with so many amazing writers, and I would just ask questions of the people who did it well. And they'd be like, oh, well, I do this or I do this, and kind of file it away and pick which one you want to do for your own writing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're in the magazine editorial world, you're learning to write, and then you kind of make this jump again to become editor. So how did you make that transition, first of all?
I'll be honest, in magazine world, it's a very common transition. And there's not a lot of formal training around it. A lot of it is watching what the people, you know, who have edited you over the years do. Mm-hmm. And you mimic it, and your ear starts to hear what good story sounds like. And so you start to, you know, tweak for that and listen for that, and then you can pull it out of other people's work. So that's not a great answer to that. It's very common that you mimic what has been done with you. And I was very lucky to learn from people, you know, kind of best of the best. And so then you can start to mimic that. Okay. There's going to be a lot of answers around mimicking today, but I think mimicking is a great way to do this.
Okay. So that mimicking involves having a lot of exposure to your bosses, basically, mm-hmm. right? Okay. So you had a lot of exposure to your bosses. You got to witness them working, and you got to kind of be a bystander and watching what they did and how they did it.
And I think another thing on that note is that you don't just take feedback and their edits and stuff kind of passively. You don't just take them for that one piece. You say, hey, what is the pattern here that they're doing? Like, every single time, are they cutting out these types of words? Are they starting with this type of sentence or something? You look for the larger pattern, because that keeps you from making the same kind of thing next time.
Okay, gotcha. Do you have an example of that by any chance?
So, really easy example is word count. It's literally much easier to write long than to write short. And as a junior person who's writing, you're going to always put in more words than you need. And the best thing that I ever did for my writing was when I moved into an editing role, because all those years where you're like, okay, take out the words, you kind of get it and you mimic and you see. But then when I started editing other people's work, you're like, whoa, what are all these words doing here? I don't need any of them. Let me cut them out. And so it's less an example of how it plays out or, you know, how it works, but more you have that big picture thing of too many words. And so, you know, as a rule, you have to go through and cut out words. But then when you kind of experience somebody else's work fresh, it's very easy to see how to cut out the words again.
Okay. So learning from your boss, but also learning what you have to teach others as well.
Yeah. And okay. Also I'd say, so what if you don't have a lot of exposure of how something is done well from your boss? I think there's so much out there now that you can find online or look for online, or maybe your colleague has a boss that's showing them how to do lots of things. You can say like, hey, can I, you know, read over your edits or see what they're doing or listen in on this conversation or something. So even if you don't happen to have, great bosses. Like I, you know, most of my career I've had really amazing bosses, but even if you don't have that, there's people in your ecosystem that you can get the same experience from.
Okay, great. So I love this. Just kind of taking advantage of the people and resources around you and kind of learning from them. That's awesome. So once you kind of moved into Oprah Magazine, you're this editor, did you feel like there was ever any gaps of your knowledge? Were you ever like, I don't know this that they're talking about, or this whole part of my job
Yes.
I don't understand.
You want to know what I didn't know about?
What?
Is cooking stuff. I moved in. I was working my way into being the food editor, and it was amazing what I did not know about food and cooking. And so one of my favorite things to do is to take classes. If I don't know something, I do love a good class. And so the magazine sent me to culinary school, and I went through a culinary program for a year on the side, nights and weekends type of deal. And it was such an amazing way to get grounded in a field, right? Because then it was like I was getting decent, at least, at the writing and editing part, and just got grounded in the field that I was going to write about. Mm-hmm. So there's always something so great now about taking classes, and I don't take nearly as much as I should, but I think they also hold you accountable. You're there to learn, and you're also accountable to learn.
Yeah, that's really awesome. Okay, classes. Yes, I love classes. Okay, awesome. So then you took all these classes. You're this amazing food editor. You wrote a book.
So the book came out of, working day to day and talking to all of these food entrepreneurs, because I was featuring people in the magazine and definitely featuring their products in the magazine. And along the way, their stories were so great that I wrote an article on their stories in Oprah, and that turned into a book deal with Penguin Random House.
Mm, okay. So when you started that process, when you started realizing and seeing all these stories coming together and you're like, this could be a book, you hadn't written a book before. So once again, you had to teach yourself what you needed to know to go through this whole process. How did you learn how to write a book? How did you learn how to go through the publishing process? Tell me all about that.
So I can't take credit where credit isn't due. I had an amazing agent who, again, like, coached me through the whole process. And I had been writing professionally for a number of years. Mm-hmm. So the writing part wasn't that hard. What I really learned in that process, though, was project management. Because up until then, I'd always been, a managing editor would tell me, here's what you're writing and here's when everything is due. And, you know, I would just follow the deadlines and even the team around it, right? Like, I had my team at work. But for a book, I had to lay it all out. I had to make a plan where I worked back, and I had to do X by X date and think through every single step of how it was all going to come together. And that was just pure, you know, there was no other option. I was going to have to do it like this, or it wasn't going to happen. So that was really the most interesting thing that came out of writing the book, was learning how to manage a big project and break it down into teeny, 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 teeny tasks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, awesome. Okay, so you wrote this book and you had this amazing agent who kind of walked you through it. How did you get the agent, by the way? How did you know to start that process?
So I would always, you know, look for writers to write for me at Oprah. And so I was literally on the phone with an agent at this agency where I ended up going, and we were negotiating to get one of her writers to write for me. And we started talking about other stuff. And the next thing you knew, I was coming in to talk to them about a project, and ended up never working on that project, but said, by the way, I have this book proposal. And I think that's a kind of big lesson here is I had written the article in the magazine. It did really well about food entrepreneurs. And so I said, you know what, this could be a book. And I literally just sat down and Googled how to write a book proposal. And I blocked out one weekend. I wrote the book proposal, and then it was sitting there. And I meant to do something with it, but things got busy for about a month or two. And it just shows how sometimes just the mere act of doing something makes you start thinking about it and putting pieces in play. So then when I was on the phone with that agent, it was totally natural to be like, yeah, let me come in. By the way, I have this proposal. Do you want to look at it? And we signed it that day. So it always helps to just go forth and do something. And I do say, I don't know if I had said I have this idea if it all would have moved in the same way. But the mere fact that I had 20 pages that I'd written moved everything along.
I love that. And it also took advantage of your relationships, which is pretty key here. You had had a relationship with this woman before. So
100%. I had a lot of nice breaks on the way to my book deal. So I will be the very first to admit that.
I know. And I think that's so important, just the relationships you know and getting to know everyone. So that's great. Okay. So you worked at Oprah Magazine, then you worked at Reader's Digest, similar role as an editor. And then you started two companies of your own. You started PR School with a friend, and you co-founded Guesterly with your husband. I have to ask at this point, we need to talk about time management, because you had a career, you were taking culinary school, you were writing books, you were starting businesses. Tell me, what did your days look like when you had all these side projects going on?
Well, first and foremost, I will admit that none of those all happened at the same time.
That's good.
So, you know, the trajectory is that things happen one by one by one, and things lead into each other. And so it doesn't sound nearly as crazy if they're not all happening at once. But time management is a really big thing for me. And part of it is making project plans. It's a lot about just getting up and getting it done. So I wrote my book, for example, between 5 and 7 a.m. while I was working full time. And that sounds kind of crazy. It felt a little bit crazy then, but also it's like once you're up and you're doing it, you're doing it. It is what it is. And so you can get a lot done in 2 hours a day. And almost everything I've done that's been a cool thing really started from a 2 hours a day mindset. But on that trajectory note, really what happened is I went from magazines to kind of getting the itch while I wrote my book about food entrepreneurs. I was like, I could do this. This sounds really cool. I totally went into it as a food person. Thought I was going to do food forever and ever and ever. And in the end was like, wow, business so hot right now. So exciting. And from there, end up having this idea. We had made these guest guides for our own wedding, which turned into Guesterly. And turned out that one of the things that was really a zone of genius and something I really liked doing for Guesterly was getting PR. And other entrepreneurs started coming to me and asking for advice because they didn't know anything about what it was really like, you know, from the editorial side. And so once I had something to give, you know, I could talk about how to pitch the media and really it all made sense and rip up your press release and it's all going to be fine. And then they could say, well, yeah, that's awesome. And I would ask them a question because honestly, everybody in entrepreneur world knew more than me when I started. I knew nothing. And, you know, parts of that continue to be true. Tons of other people know way more than me about certain areas. And so I could give and then I could ask for their advice and their help and something else. And that's really how I started to learn this whole entrepreneur world, this whole marketing world piece by piece was I would give something that I learned and they would give something that they learned and we both got a little bit smarter. So
you basically, instead of reaching out to somebody and asking for their help or asking them for advice, you would almost become friends with them instead. And then it's like you're both kind of wanting to help each other out.
Exactly. And I would just help from the get-go. And then it becomes the easiest thing ever to keep pinging ideas off of each other and things like that.
Okay. Awesome. So, yeah. So then you had to learn about the startup world. And basically what you did is learn from other startups by kind of getting together with them, getting to know them, seeing how you could help them with their business, and then also utilizing their expertise to learn what you needed to know to start 2 startups.
Ooh, that is a very good way of saying it. Love it.
Okay, just trying to make sure I have it boiled down to the basics.
Yes, much more articulate and shorter. And you know I like shorter, even though sometimes I go long. So.
Okay, awesome. So you started this amazing company. You got all of your advice from all these other entrepreneurs. And then you sold your company and you started work at Chatbooks. Chatbooks bought Guesterly, right? Is that correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then you became their VP of marketing and soon after their CMO. So this is, I thought, was really inspiring just to me because I was like, wow, look at this girl. She has an editorial background. She jumped into startups and now she's in marketing. And not only that, but she's at the top of her game in marketing. And I just thought, how did you learn what you needed to know to be the CMO? Like, prior to those roles, you didn't work in marketing directly in the field. Obviously, you knew a lot about marketing from your past roles. But did you come into it at all with, you know, feeling, again, those gaps of knowledge or things you needed to learn about how to, you know, be this chief marketing officer for a large company?
So I will tell you the number one thing is that there is an awful lot that I do not know, and I am very comfortable with that. And there are an awful lot of people who are smarter than me at lots of different things. But I can be, you know, I can know 75% about lots of things, which lets me get up a little bit big picture and say, okay, if I know 75% of this, how does it connect to the 75% I know over here? And really, especially as a CMO, you are managing lots of other really smart people at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the president doesn't need to know everything about national security. He does, but he doesn't have to know the nitty gritty. I really rely on my amazing, amazing team to teach me lots of things, but also I rely on them and I trust them to be smarter at me than me. smarter than me at those things. Like hands down, I cannot do what my team does on any individual thing. And I think a lot of that is just literally being comfortable that I do not have to be the smartest person in the room on every single one of these topics. So I do learn a lot. I read a ton. I do feel like I'm usually sprinting and trying to catch up on things, but I also don't let it stress me out, because I think every other person out there who's trying to move fast in this world that's changing a lot is learning constantly too.
Absolutely. Okay. That is so brilliant. And I am so inspired right now. Now I'm just going to ask you a few lightning round questions that are just things that I think are super interesting and really beneficial as you're kind of growing in your career. So one, what conferences, if any, do you attend to keep up your skill set and knowledge?
So as I've shifted into different industries and things like that, my conferences have definitely shifted. Like there's certain things as a food editor, you always hit these and you always hit these. Mm-hmm. I don't have one right now that I'm going to say like this is the absolute one to attend. Mm-hmm. I think what's always worked well is whatever the marquee conference is that everybody is at, going to that one, it's definitely good to be there, but then plan things with people around the edges of it. And so maybe where that leads me is that conferences are great for the material, but they're more important for the people. And so every conference I've ever gone to, it's about how do I connect with the people I really want to meet here? And a lot of times it's planning something, you know, breakfast the morning before it starts or drinks out the first night or something like that. So I put a lot of energy into planning a conference before I even arrive. And that's how I get the most out of any conference.
Awesome. Are you part of any mastermind groups or mentorship groups?
So I was part of an amazing, amazing mastermind group for about 2 years. Including in there was the co-founder of my PR school, Angela, was in there as well. And I am looking to build a new one of CMOs, but it was a huge experience for me to be in that mastermind group. It was entrepreneurs who were doing really, really incredible things, five women, and I cannot recommend it enough. One of the best things I ever did for my business. The one caveat I would say on that is if you're getting a mastermind group, I think you want people, A, to have to be accountable, and B, it's got to be people who you respect the heck out of, because to make it work, you've got to pour time into it. And so you want to respect the heck out of the people that you're pouring this time into.
Okay. Awesome. Were they all at the same level as you, above, below? How did that work out?
Really honest, I was a little baby entrepreneur in that group, and everybody else owned businesses that were doing, you know, multiple millions more than Guesterly was. And so I was very flattered to be in that group. But again, I was able to give something from a totally different perspective.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, if you can work your way into a group that will let you in when you're the baby, that is always the best.
Awesome. Okay, I know. Totally. That's amazing. Okay, do you read any newspapers or magazines?
Oh my gosh, I am still a voracious reader. I mean, I got into magazines because I love reading newspapers and magazines. But really short story of what I'm on every day, I get the Wall Street Journal CMO daily newsletter, but then New York Times, Inc., Fast Company, HBR, and then my absolute favorite thing to read that's like candy is the Skims daily newsletter. It's just everything that's hip and cool that I otherwise miss out on because I'm not so hip and cool. At least I feel like I read the Skim and I learn whatever the cool thing is that I should know about.
Awesome. Do you listen to any podcasts?
I love the Startup Podcast. Mm. And then I love Gretchen Rubin's Happiness Project.
Awesome.
Anyways, it's Happy by Gretchen Rubin or something like that. It is so fun, little teeny things you can do to just have a more happy, productive life.
Awesome. What's your favorite business and or marketing book or books?
Oh, okay. So we right now at Chatbooks love this book called The Advantage, and it's how to structure a healthy team. There's tons of books about how to grow faster and things like that, which I love. But I love this idea of building a healthy team, which really plays into stuff too, like a healthy culture And how do you get a healthy culture without things like foosball tables, right? It's like what innately makes a healthy culture.
Yes.
But it has one huge aha that I come back to over and over again, which is that your loyalty should be to the team that you are a part of, not necessarily the team that you lead. Like, of course, you're loyal to both. But how that really plays out is that my loyalty is to my executive team, which includes the CTO and the CEO and the CFO, for example, instead of to the marketing team, which basically means that we do what's good for the good of the company as opposed to what's good for our own little silo. Does that make sense?
Yes, I love
and
that.
And it's a huge mindset shift for me because I think it's very natural to be like, oh, I'm fighting for my silo. I'm fighting for the company as a whole. And that helps my silo, but it definitely keeps your focus on helping the company as a whole.
Perfect. Okay. And then, what does your daily routine look like?
So I love to get up and work out first thing. Also, if I don't do it first thing, it doesn't happen. So I'm up at 5 and then I'm usually at the gym from 6 to 7 and either I am commuting to work around 7:30 to 8, or if I'm working from home, then I'm on it as fast as possible. And right now my days are these whirlwinds of meeting with my amazing team, meeting with partners, setting direction, giving feedback, watching some of these amazing campaigns we do roll live. And usually sometime around 6 or 7 o'clock, I'm like, whoosh, okay, I should look at my email inbox now. So I am really lucky these days that there's just a ton of on the go and it keeps it really exciting.
Awesome. And what are your goals professionally?
Oh, goals is such a fun word because it implies that you know what's coming around the corner next. And I have no idea what's coming around the corner next. And that, if there's one thread through my career, it's that I've been really open. And a lot of times at certain junctures, I've tried for a number of different things that could have taken me in completely different directions. And so I don't so much have goals as except to like keep trying new things because that's how every single door opens. Mm-hmm. So I keep trying new things and keep doing new things and usually a door opens and it takes me somewhere amazing.
Yes. Amen, sister.
Woo.
And then finally, it can't all be about career achievement. Let me know, do you have any goals personally for personal achievement in your life?
Well, I do feel like I go through seasons where I have more career goals and more personal goals, and right now is pretty career focused. But one of the things I really want to do in my life is qualify for the Boston Marathon. So I've been working on that on and off for a number of years now, and some point I will get it. So that's the back of head long-term goal.
Love it. Well, thank you so much, Rachel, for being on the Careerist podcast. It was such a pleasure to host you. And I just learned so much about business and how to learn on the job.
Well, thank you. This was fun.
Thank you. All right. We will see you next time. Careerist is sponsored by Everyone Social, employee advocacy and social selling software designed to increase your marketing reach by 561%. Learn more about Everyone Social at everyonesocial.com. Thanks for listening.